This presentation of Finding Fairways is produced by Blarney Stone Broadcasting and was pre-recorded. Good morning and welcome to Finding Fairways, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. On this week's episode, my co-host Dan Pohl and I will discuss the Michigan Amateur, which was taking place this week at Boyne Highlands, an event that Dan won twice. We will also look at the PGA Tour as it restarts and the results that have happened. Plus, Dan will discuss some video that he's been reviewing of his swing back from 1982, how it compares to the golf pros of today, and his swing now at the age of 65. So that and more here on Finding Fairways, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com and boynegolf.com. Good morning, Michigan golfers. It is time for Finding Fairways, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Jerry Coyne in our studios in Grayling on the phone with Dan Pohl from the Pohl Cat. And Dan, before we get into the PGA Tour and the Michigan Amateur, I was down there last week with my son. The Pohl Cat is in beautiful shape.
Yeah, we've got a new green superintendent come on board, and we've, along with Dean Paysons and myself and Doug Moeller, came from Gull Lakeview, and we've really put some new cutting patterns into the mix. You know, the fairways are fantastic, but the weird thing, Jerry, is it's almost the end of June, and it seems like it's the start of the season.
Right.
People have been so excited about getting out and play the last probably week or so. We've just been stacked. It's crazy. I think people are really starting to recognize that, you know, golf is kind of a cool way to get out and enjoy some sunlight. I got to say that for this time of the year, the course is in the best shape I've seen in quite a long time.
There's no doubt the greens were really pure, and I can attest to how busy you were. When I first talked to you about making a tee time, we had a little bit of an opening, and then by the time we got on the golf course, you were stacked till 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like you need to slow yourself down to Bernhard Langer speed or something like that. But yeah, I mean, we're finding out as people are delaying time slot. I mean, even to try to schedule cart girls and schedule our staff, 2 days ago, the Wednesday, you know, looked okay. We've got a league later on. But all of a sudden this morning, I mean, like I said, we don't have but I think two tee times between now and 2 o'clock.
Wow. And
it just filled in like that, Jerry. I mean, so people are going to play, but they're not booking it out quite as far in advance. I hope that that's something that's going on around the state, because the whole golf industry is deserving of that enthusiasm. And we had a long spring, but now we're seeing it kick back in.
Dan, one of the things that you do at the Pohl Cat is give lessons. As a matter of fact, you gave me a great playing lesson a couple years ago that really changed a couple of things that I was doing with my ball striking. Are you still giving a lot of lessons?
Yeah, I am. I'm finding some people new to the game, and I've got a couple of people I'm trying to work with them, because with my advancement, I can help a beginner, but I'm a little more in-depth than probably what they are ready for. So I've got a couple of younger people that I'm letting them get out and get their feet wet teaching. But I've got a couple of gentlemen that I've been working with a little more consistency, and they're showing really good results. So, you know, I don't push the lessons very much, Gary. I love to be inside talking to people. You know, I've been serving drinks outside, and the marketing that I can do, and my best value to the Pohl Cat is to be seen inside and around the barn and doing things like that, rather than, you know, standing out on the range and teaching. But I am relatively busy, but I don't necessarily need to be any more busy. Let's just say that. And it is hard for me at 65, and I know a lot of teachers that get out on that range for extended period of times, but I got to tell you, after two or three in a row, and you're out there for 4 or 5 hours, my back feels it. So I need to stay active during that course and time. And so I really kind of hesitate on rolling three or four in a row, because I can't give them the amount of effort that I need to give them to give them help.
So if people are looking at bringing up groups or making their tee times, where do they get that information? You guys are online at pohlcat.net?
Yeah, pohlcat.net. It's actually, we do have now tied in with Golf Now. It's better off to just make sure to give us a call at 989-773-4221. because then you can talk to somebody that's got that tee sheet right in front of them, and they can kind of give you a little bit better advice on, you know, the speed of play at certain times and when the, and we do have our den open. We're cooking right now cheeseburgers and hamburgers and, you know, hot dogs and brats. We haven't got into our other sandwich menus yet, but we'll be coming up pretty soon. So we do have that available and all types of good brews if you're looking for a cold one to match up with that.
All right, Dan, when we come back here on Finding Fairways, we're going to talk about the resumption of the PGA Tour and the stop that they made at your old stomping grounds, Colonial. And then later on, we're going to talk about some video stuff that Dan Pohl's been doing. Plus, the Michigan Amateur is going on at the Heathers in Boyne Highlands. So that's all when we're back on Finding Fairways, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. It's time to check in with our good friends from carlsgolfland.com. Tim Coyle on the phone with me. Tim, you and I were talking a little bit just after Father's Day about how so much of golf lessons and equipment and fitting are all starting to move into the technology age.
It's so different from when I even started here, all the different technologies that you see out there in the market. The range finder that they have, the GPS watches, to things that we have here in store from the TrackMan range that we have at both facilities now, where you can walk up to any stall on our range and get tour grade radar system right at your fingertips. It's pretty incredible.
And I know you use all that data when you get people in for the club fitting. Carl's has a tremendously detailed club fitting system to make sure that you get the absolute right equipment.
Yeah, it really does. And we have, you know, our guys will spend time with anybody, regardless of what it is they're looking for, trying to figure out what's best for them, whether it be a putter in our Sam Putt Lab dedicated studio here at Bloomfield, or the TrackMan range, even in the launch pad of the TrackMan 4 technology. You know, and we have customers, there's technology and everything, whether it be ball fitting and yeah, it's everywhere, and it's not only beneficial to us to make sure our customers are getting dialed in, but everybody loves to cut a few strokes off their score too, right?
And even if you're listening to this from a little far away from St. John's or Bluefield Hills, it's worth the trip to make sure that you have the absolute right equipment, and the best thing to do is get dialed in at Carl's Golfland. Tim, who do they call to make that appointment to get fit?
We have two different types of fitting. One is a standard fitting, which is available at both of our store locations. That is, there's no appointment necessary for a standard fitting. We'll take you outside to make sure you're dialed in right using GC Quad and other technologies. And then if you're looking for more of a techie or a really looking for scientifically what's best for you by the numbers, you're going to want to dial our Bloomfield location and speak to somebody about a launch pad performance fitting. And we can do anything from driver to iron to putter fitting, really get dialed in for sure.
It will definitely pay off in the long run. Tim Coyle, thanks for joining us on Finding Fairways, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks to carlsgolfland.com.
Thanks so much.
Back to Finding Fairways, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Jerry Coyne in studio and on the phone with us from the Polecat in Mount Pleasant is Dan Pohl. And Dan, if you're like me, it's been great to see live competitive golf back on television with some incredible leaderboards, both at Colonial, a place you know really well, and then Harbortown. Although you had to have played Harbortown as well, correct?
Never had the real high finishes there, Jerry, but you know, it was a golf course that back in that time frame, similar to what Colonial was, is that you could put it in the right center of the fairway and that overhanging kind of scrubby stuff would be, you know, in your way, basically.
Yeah.
I think we saw Webb Simpson have to snap hook a sand wedge around one of them. And so it's one of those golf courses where, you know, you make a mistake and you don't even have to make a big mistake because those greens are so small. But, you know, the thing that I did at the Heritage, at Hilton Head that, nobody would ever know is I made a hole in one on the fourth hole there. And I won a computer back when NCR gave out a computer. And then that same week, I went ahead and Merrill Lynch used to have this long drive competition for the top 10 players in the field distance wise. And I won that, and I got $3,000 for that. So I had a successful week before the tournament started. So I look at Hilton Head in a little bit of a different way than some of them. Plus, I got to tell you, some of my best memories with Payne Stewart are right there on right next to the clubhouse. We had some great times. And so, you know, I never played really well there, but I had some great memories.
Well, I love Hilton Head. It's a great golf destination. That golf course, for me, was tremendously hard to play because I tend to spray it sometimes. And what those guys did to Hilton Head, I know Davis Love came in and cleaned out some of those trees that you were talking about. It's still one of the tighter courses on tour. Man, they ran those scores up something serious.
Well, one of the things I think people are forgetting that with all of the lack of play on some of these, you know, resort-style courses, the greens are just in fantastic shape. I mean, they haven't had the traffic that they've normally have this time of year. You just saw people making putts from everywhere. And normally, this time of year, when you've had 3 months or more of pretty solid, you know, foot traffic on there, you're going to get some bumping movement around there. But, you know, Hilton Head, similar to Colonial, it doesn't favor one style of golfer. It just favors somebody who's hitting a lot of good short irons. If you look at the distance of that golf course, you've got 6 or 7 holes, you know, outside of the 3 par fives, probably 5 or 6 holes where they got short irons in their hands. And so there's a few stretches in there where if you can knock the flag down with some shorter irons, you have a chance to really score. Hilton Head really is probably I wouldn't call it weak, but it might be one of the easier, you know, 4 or 5 hole finishes. I mean, you got a par 5 at 15.
15, yeah.
16 is like a long iron or a 3-wood and a wedge. And 17, even though, depending on how the wind is blowing, you know, you've got pretty accessible hole locations back in there. And then 18, you know, unless you can't drive it on the face of the earth, you're not going to miss that fairway. It's just a very difficult second shot. So
right.
when you come in there, you do, and I think that's what Webb Simpson had even talked about, you know, that you got to be able to go out and make some birdies, you know, coming in. He actually lost the lead, I think, and then he put some good wedges in his hands and hit some great shots. But I think the one, Jerry, that I just was amazed about, you know, that first week out at Colonial with small greens and with pretty benign conditions, but not easy. You know, Colonial plays tough fairly, you know, most often. But the scores that they shot there were impressive.
Yeah, the crazy thing was is all the near misses on 18. I mean, four or five guys could have made it in that playoff. Justin Rose's putt looked like it was good. All those putts look really good. And then you got Xander Schauffele, who gets a major rip out on 18. And then in the playoff, Morikawa has just a brutal 180 and out.
Well, you know, again, when you're at that level and you hit a little firm, those greens don't take the edges. Those greens aren't falling in the tops, you know, and trickling in. When you put some speed on them, they're doing some spin outs. But, you know, it Morikawa especially, it looked like he almost could have trapped it a little bit, put a little more speed on him than what he needed, because it did go, you know, zipping towards the hole. But having putted that 18th hole with needing a par, I had to make a 6-footer to get into the playoff against Payne there in 86. That's a tough read. I don't think guys, you know, really understood, you know, the hole locations, you know, getting in the gun under the gun for the first time. And so it's not unexpected that 18 is going to have a lot of decent looking putts that don't go in, but, you know, it's just matching that speed with the read. And when you haven't been there for a while, you know, it doesn't take much to open that face up a little bit or shut her down, and all of a sudden that one that looks like it's going in might have the wrong spin on it. So, but again, you get back to just the quality of play, kind of showed that those guys were working on their game a little bit.
No doubt.
Off time.
Yeah.
But still, to have to make the putts and to do the things, it was an awful impressive first 2 weeks, more so from Webb Simpson, because I think when you play good and you go into to Sunday with the lead and you're that pressure for the first time with the lead is on you, to go out and do what he did was really impressive and good for him.
Yeah, no, he's really turned it around in the coverage. They were talking about it, and it's absolutely true. You know, Simpson won that U.S. Open at Olympic Club in San Francisco a few years back and he was anchored putting, and he was one of the guys that really – he couldn't make anything after he couldn't anchor his putter. He's learned this new kind of style of holding the putter, and he's back in the top 15 overall putting. You know, I can't think of anybody, including Bernard Langer, who's really gone from that dregs of putting to improve that much.
Well, you know, Keegan Bradley putted pretty well for a little bit, but I think it's finding. I think whoever invented the claw should get a percentage of these guys because they're so modified on all their claws.
Yeah.
Some people's fingers don't fit like that, or you know, or don't have the time or the inclination to make that commitment to, you know, that style of putting because it looks goofy. It, you know, to get in the routine that they have to get into and be prepared to, you know, have people analyze it as much as you could if you started putting bad. I mean, I think that's the big thing that most of these guys make a long-term commitment. Their staff or whoever they're working with, the professional is saying, hey, you know, if you're going to do this, then give it 100% for a while. But, you know, I mean, he obviously has not only the grip is fitting what he's doing, but it's something done with his eyesight to, you know, how his shoulders, his hands, everything. He just looks so comfortable with a very uncomfortable looking grip. And to be able to do that, I mean, I know if I do that, I look down and my hands are all crinkled up and stuff, and I go, wonder how that would look on television. I'm not so sure I'd stick with it.
I guess if you follow the history of it, it's Chris DeMarco that really came up with that claw grip. But according to Webb Simpson, Tim Clark, the Australian, is the one that taught him how to do it. But you're right. That has become the go-to. I mean, Mickelson is doing that now. And it seems to work for a lot of players.
Yeah, you know, a lot of guys on the longer putts, they change a little bit, you know, because you need a little bit more acceleration. You know, it's kind of like cross-handed. On shorter putts, you go to maybe out to 12, 15 feet with cross-handed. It feels real good until you have to really hit it with a little more force. And then a lot of guys go back conventional because it brings the right hand back into it a little bit more. So I think with this this particular phase of, and I don't think it's going to be a, you know, anything that's short-lived, I think it's going to stay with it. But I'm going to see different people, different players adapt and go cross-handed, you know, different ways and try to figure out what distance really fits this because it does change your shoulder position. It changes your elbow to hand position, gives you more of that rocking look, which keeps the putter really on line. So I don't think anybody has been more confident with their putter than Webb Simpson has been recently because when he gets into the mix, he's staying there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. When we return here on Finding Fairways, brought to us by CarlsGolfLand.com, Dan Pohl will tell a few tales about his success at the Michigan Amateur, which is going on this week right now at the Heathers course in Boyne Highlands. So we'll be back with those stories here on Finding Fairways. Pleasant. And Dan, as we were talking off air, the tour resumes this week at the TPC Cromwell. You have a story about playing there.
Yeah, Jerry, it's probably my biggest disappointment of tour golf. My whole, you know, however long you want to put my career at it. I had a one-shot lead going into the last hole there. And
wow.
It's a very difficult driving hole. I mean, one of the tougher on the back nine. And I went through 17, which is the hardest hole in the back nine. I made a good par, and I go into 18, and I drive it 8 miles down there. Guys are back hitting fives and six irons, and I got a little nine iron.
Wow.
So perfect back right hole location and with a one-shot lead. And I'm telling you, I could par that hole 99 out of 100 times except for that time.
Wow.
And I just trapped a little nine iron, and my normal little cut would be back in there. You know, I figured 15 foot left of the hole, and I had two putt, and I got the win. It was the old Sammy Davis Hartford Classic at that point. I just got over top a little bit, trapped it, didn't have left to right spin on it, knocked it over the back of the green, down the little slope, pitched it back and missed the putt, and was in a playoff with David Frost and Phil Blackmar.
I remember those guys.
Yeah, damn if I didn't lose it on the 16th hole, which was a different par three than what they have now. It actually came from a different direction, but David hit it in there, made a deuce, and like I said, I still think if there is, you know, one giveaway that I should have had, you know, I got the worst part of the deal out, but it just shows it doesn't matter if you got a nine iron or what in your hand, you make a little mistake, and that pressure, you know, adds up. So to this day, I still tell people, I said, if there was one that got away, it was the Sammy Davis Hartford Classic in, I forget even what year it was in, probably 87 or so, somewhere around there.
Yeah, it would have been great to, you know, to get that trophy from Sammy. That's a groovy shot, man.
Yeah, it would have been. Like I said, there's a lot of things that you think over your career, Jerry, but you even mentioned that you kind of lipped one out to win your flight sometime. Everything has a value, personal value.
Yeah.
You know, it just means just as much to somebody else to win, you know, to make a mistake in a club championship versus a PGA event. So it should have been mine, but I let it go.
Well, that lip out is not really ever forgotten because my partner still occasionally after he has a couple of drinks will remind me to this day about that bus.
Unless he should. Unless it was like a 20-footer.
It was a 12-footer downhill. I mean, it wasn't an easy putt.
If it wasn't over 50%, you did okay. At least you put yourself in a position to win it.
Yeah, it was my ball, not his. So, but we are, you know, it's funny you brought up a TPC Cromwell, which has been completely redone. And that's where the tour resumes. We want to briefly talk about that. So, that course is not as tight as the two that they're on, but it is point-to-point golf, a lot of blind shots now, Dan. And you're familiar with that event, obviously. Who, I mean, other than Daniel Berger, you got to say he's probably going to play pretty good there. Who do you like?
Boy, it's tough to say. I mean, you got good fields, you know, teeing it up now every week.
Yeah.
You know, got different guys stepping up. I mean, you got to look at, you know, those little bulldog guys. Maybe Patrick Reed steps up and, you know, does something. Who knows?
Good call.
There's some guys that have had a you know, a lot of success there. And whenever you change a golf course around, maybe it doesn't suit somebody's eye or whatever. You know, when everybody's playing it kind of new, you know, that golf course was always the front nine was kind of totally different than the back nine. And I say that because it starts to go out near the river and you got some holes that you have to play well there. You can't make a mistake on 17. It might be one of the tougher, you know, finishing holes with water on the right, the bunker on the left, and, you know, double bogey is always in the equation there. You got the short drivable 15 there that, you know, guys can make two or they can make five.
Seven. I've seen that hole gets a lot of different numbers.
Yeah, you'd love to say that there's two or three guys, but I mean, there wouldn't have originally been a course where I thought Jordan Spieth would have won, but you know, when you're holing bunker shots and stuff to win events, you know, it's kind of your week. So
right.
I think the guys that are coming in there with some momentum are going to do well, but you know, I haven't really followed it real close. The field looks pretty good. I mean, I'd like to see Koepka start to bring his game to a level as we see it work into the summer, and you know, maybe this is a spot that he opens up.
Well, he played really good last week other than one round, and when they're going that low at Harbortown, one round's enough to keep you out of winning. But I think Koepka's a good call. You know, he can hit irons all over that golf course. The quality of the field, when you got 20 of the top 30 players in the world teeing it up every week, you're going to get good results.
And what's interesting now is that they're playing a lot of golf courses in the par 70s and stuff, you know, 71, 70. And so these longer hitters, even though, you know, they're still great players, it does take a couple of those opportunities for eagles out.
Right.
And so you got to be, you know, you got to look at guys that are really good iron players on these four pars. And it might even boil down to your first two rounds, you know, playing the right nine at the right time of the day. You know,
right.
You start out and the wind isn't blowing off of the river there. You get the back nine early and you can put a number, you know, back there. Like I said, you can score on the back nine both directions. You know, you might see some 31s, but you might see some 40s, too. The front nine's more of that one that you don't have a lot of penalties and a lot of, you know, kind of 34 to 36 or 7. So you won't see the big variation normally.
Dan, when I was down to visit at the Polecat a week or so ago, you were fiddling around, you and some tech guys, with comparing. They had great footage of your swing back in the day when you were a Vardon Trophy winner, and then you were comparing them to some of the new studs. Tell our listeners a little bit about that and then when that's going to be up online and they can see it, because it's really cool if you ask me.
This is really going to be neat, and I'm excited about what we did. I found an old nine-frame sequence shots of my swing from Golf Magazine in 1982. And so I got thinking, I went out in the range and I hit the same driver that I hit back in 82, 37 years later.
Steel shaft.
But as I was thinking of that, I said, you know what? My ego is going to get in the way a little bit here because I developed a lot of club head speed. Now I was a big, long hitter. What makes my swing any different than some of these new guys? So we basically picked six players, and it was just a random pick. We got their sequence of their style. So we got Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, John Rahm, Tony Finau, Rory McIlroy. We're comparing my swing mechanics and the power positions that I've set up to and got to versus what they do. And Brooks Koepka's in there too. So
cool.
What we did is we had the frames of mine matched up perfectly with, I got a friend of mine, Jack DeFranco out of Detroit, that's a whiz on these framing, you know, on this stuff. And he put together all of these sequences of these players against my swing. And Steve Robbins, my old high school golf coach, who knows my swing better than anybody,
right,
did a thesis on my swing back in high school. And so we sat down and we looked at the swing, broke them down into all nine positions, you know, take away the setup, the takeaway, the transition, all these things. And we compare it to those individual players, not all of them on every one. But what you're going to see is the position that power players get into in certain spots in their swing that are different, but then what are the similarities as they get into that position of, you know, transition into impact.
And right.
It's just absolutely amazing that these six players have different swing mechanics, but yet in certain spots in their swing are duplicates. I mean, literally the hitting zone is the attack area, the club going through the hitting area is so similar, and you'll see different footwork, you'll see all this stuff. That is going to come out in a couple of different segments here real soon. It went a little long. It was almost over 50 minutes, and so we're going to break it up to two sessions that we'll show. And then the next one that we're shooting tomorrow, or actually taping tomorrow, is a swing comparison of my swing that I just talked about in 1982 against the same club being hit 37 years later. That's going to be a comparison of what my old body doesn't do and what my young body did. And then also a comparison of the new club. At the, you know, you got a 43 1/4 inch wooden head versus a 44 1/2 inch metal head. What the shaft does. And so it's two different comparisons on my old swing versus old club and new club. And Steve and I are going to break that down, and I'm thinking we're going to have a riot with that one because I know what I felt and I know what I'm feeling now in comparison to what I did back in 1982. So we're going to use that more as a learning tool and a teaching tool for as you get older. You know, what happens? Where do you lose the power
right
in your turn? Where, what's going to happen? You know, with your shoulders, all those things, and hopefully people can pick up on a few points that we bring out, along with having some fun, you know, with me discussing, you know, what it was like in that 37 years of transition.
Dan, when we return here on Finding Fairways, we got to get that information so people will keep people on the edge of their seats on where they can see that, along with an overview of the Michigan Amateur, an event that Dan Pohl won twice. So stay tuned here on your station for Finding Fairways, brought to us by CarlsGolfLand.com. We're back here on Finding Fairways, brought to us by CarlsGolfLand.com. Jerry Coyne in studio, joined by Dan Pohl down at the Polecat. And Dan, in the last segment, we were talking about your new video comparison, your swing back in 1982 versus players of today, and then a comparison as you now at 65 years old. So I know a lot of people are going to want to see that. Is that going to be YouTube? Where are people can dig that up?
We're trying to figure out what's going to be the best delivery, Jerry. And yes, it'll be on YouTube for sure. We're not in it for any money, so it's not going to be sold. They go to the polecat.net, our webpage, and go to post. I will post it, where it's going to go, and what they'll be able to see. So when we get this one done, it's just a matter of how long it takes. And I think people will be very interested in watching this. And we brought Dean Paysons, our GM, out and a couple other people to watch what we had filmed and stuff just to make sure. He just sat and said, this is great. So the verbiage is good. The comparisons are good.
Dan, as we've been talking, the Michigan Amateur is in full swing right now. They just moved into the match play portion of it up at the Heathers in Boyne Highlands. As a matter of fact, while we were recording, my buddy Scott Petrovich was calling me. I'm sure he's telling me about his son, Kyle. Hopefully he's moving forward into the afternoon matches, so I'll check in with him in a minute. You won the Michigan Amateur twice. How old were you the first time you did that?
20. I was 1975 and 1977. I had, was coming out of college in both respects, and after I won it in 77, I turned professional after that. It was a fun time. I mean, listen, the now moving around, I won it twice at Belvedere, which is a golf course that I came to love for a lot of different reasons. Small greens and, smart play. You had to manage yourself pretty well, be smart around there. To play the Heather in a Michigan Amateur type of situation, obviously a great golf course, great challenges. I think once you get into match play, it gives you a lot of opportunities to maybe be aggressive at certain stages. But you're going to see a lot of holes probably lost there with, to bogeys maybe. If you get kind of stupid off the tee and don't play smart into greens. And that's what match play is going to be. And your friend, obviously, son is a good player. But, again, a course like that, see, I always at Belvedere, if I could keep the match close through eight holes, then wasn't anybody going to touch me. Because the reason I say that is because the front nine, the first eight, are very tight, very tree lined, and you got to play them smart. Although I could almost drive number one a couple of times. I took it up and I was right on the fringe back in the day. But 9, 10 were always holes that I was hitting that over the bunkers. I was hitting nine irons and wedges and stuff. And most of the guys had to play out to the side. So I always felt very comfortable if I could go into that, that ninth hole somewhere even. Or even if I was one down, I made moves where that par five, I think it's 15. I'd knock it up over the hill, trees up on the right, and hit sand wedge to the green or something. So, I think that versus where the Heather gets you is really your ability to play smart iron shots, not knock yourself out of holes with bad irons.
Yeah,
there's some room hitting it off the tee. You just again. But, I've only played up there at that golf course once, and it was last year, and I was very impressed with just the course management you have to have. And so these young players don't know it very well are going to have to make smart decisions.
Yeah, I told that to Kyle and Scott as they were heading in on Sunday for their practice round. I said, Kyle, like all these young kids, can really kill it. And I said, look at Scotty, you got to look at areas where maybe he doesn't hit it as far as he can and look at the number he wants to leave himself, because the Heather isn't wildly long, although it's going to play longer now since we had so much rain. You got to look at, what do I want to have left into those greens up at the Heather? Do I want to hit an eight?
Yeah, in the early part of the round, you got to play smart, because like a hole like number one, I mean, I didn't know exactly what to hit, and I thought I blew it right down the left side, and I was through the fairway in rough with a front pin that I couldn't stop the ball.
Yeah.
And then you've got a 20-footer coming straight down the hill. So, guys that are trying to cut it over that corner, they have to be a lot more precise than a hole number two, which is in little another little dog leg, right? You know, it could be as little as a 2-iron and a 9-iron. But if you try to go with a driver, you know, you get through. There's a lot of little quick dog legs up there that you have to play smart on. Where you want to move it up, even the, I mean, 1, 2, and 3, from my remembrance, are all little dog leg rights that I would love.
Yeah.
You pull it a little bit, it goes through the, you know, through the fairway into potentially into hazards and things like that. So, you know, length is not going to be the answer. It's going to find that line that you want to take and be comfortable that you don't have to have sand wedges into every hole. You're not afraid to hit nines.
Dan, what is being a Michigan Amateur Champion mean to you?
Well, it's huge. First, there you're just there to kind of
compete,
better your game.
Yep.
You know, you're wanting to see what level you're at against good talent. And you know, back in the day when I first beat Bud Stevens in '77, you know, Bud was recognized out of, you know, the Detroit area as the old sage. You know.
And yep.
The difference in metal play to match, that you could play both directions. You had such a variation of players that you had to beat. Big difference in distance and mentality, everything else. But just, you had to beat such a variety of players through those rounds.
Right.
And if you had aggressive player that you knew you had to make birdies against, or if you had an aggressive player that's going to make mistakes and you could win some holes with pars, that's the way you had to kind of adapt. I always felt like 7 or 68 was my par there. So with all the par fives reachable and things, if I could just hit a couple of the good short irons, somebody had to play really good to beat. That's kind of the way you got to look. But again, this Heather course is a whole different animal. And, you know, bigger greens, they're going to have to be more of a putting contest. Pars or even maybe bogeys might win some holes.
Well, Dan, I knew you'd have some great memories about the Michigan Amateur, and best of luck to those that are still in the tournament. And we will give you the results of the Michigan Amateur on next week's Finding Fairways. Dan Paul, thank you, Dan, for joining us on Finding Fairway. As we like to say, find a fairway of your own, stick a peg in the ground, and pound it down the middle. We'll be here next week. And thanks to Carl's Golfland for sponsoring. It's time to check in with our good friends at Boyne Golf. Ken Griffin, Director of Golf Marketing, is on the phone with me. Ken, what a great week for Boyne with the Michigan Amateur in full swing.
Oh, it's always, you know, this was the 109th, and this is the fourth time we've been fortunate enough to host it. And, you know, on the Heather, iconic course, you know, 630 people actually entered the tournament through the qualifiers. And we started this week on the Heather with 155. They had a stroke play for 2 days. Youth is prevailing here as we get to the end, and we can't wait for today's final round in the afternoon with James Pyatt and Tyler Kopp facing off.
Yeah, you can go to the GAM website to see the results of the tournament and some great photos of the Heather's course, which really showed off its magnificence once again. We're coming up to 4th of July weekend. Ken, what's cooking at Boyne?
Well, the probably the great news for everybody is the weather forecast. I mean, the next 10 days just look outstanding with very little rain in the forecast. You know, with our 10 Boyne golf courses, we have plenty of space to maintain proper social distancing. So, not a problem.
No, and as you just got done touring all the courses with some media, they're all in fabulous shape.
They're in great shape, and it's not, I mean, it's always about the golf, obviously, for Boyne Golf. But, you know, we're excited, too, that Avalanche Bay, Michigan's largest water park, is going to open up on July 3rd. It gives you the opportunity. You can play golf. The family can have a great vacation, and you can combine everything for the family.
That's the beauty of Boyne Golf. So go to boynegolf.com for the latest in specials, discount, lodging, and, of course, Avalanche Bay. Ken Griffin, happy 4th of July, although we'll be talking to you again next weekend.
Of course. Thanks, Jerry.
All right.